Hi, everybody. It's the day after the end of the world here in the Unified Nighthawks studio in scenic Austin, Texas. I'm Matt Foster, and with me, as always, is Trevor Trujillo.
Yeah, that's the one.
Erstwhile vocal performers and occasional movie reviewers. And we, like the kids, are not all right. That's why I'm clunking my way through the intro today, because Trevor is a little sublingual, like my B12. Which, incidentally, he should have taken.
Yeah.
Trevor, when I hand you a little pill, just take it.
I don't trust you.
It's like saying you don't trust Grace Slick.
KOKW calling. I'm on international frequency. Come in.
I am Torgo. I take care of the place while the master is away.
He's trying to cheat us, Pepe. All this talk is so he can get a better price, so he can make fools of us.
Yeah, it's so easy to make a fool of me. Why don't you try it sometime?
Well, I got something done. I got a job at Mr. Greenfeld's sporting goods store, and he promised to do anything he can to help me to get the Texans.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
I had a reason for inviting each guest. I wanted kind of a cross-section. They share one thing. They all need money. Now let's see if they're brave enough to earn it.
And you call this a party?
Could be.
So, we're at the tail end of Fantastic Fest, so we're a little beleaguered. I'm a little under the weather health-wise. You'll remember this happened last year, too.
It's Davis's fault. You know who you are.
Yeah, we'll have Davis on the show later. Yeah, I blame Davis or Doug Benson, who I heard was also rumored to be picking up cough syrup at a very late hour at a convenience store last night.
That's kind of odd. Were you making out with Doug Benson? How did you manage to get some of his saliva on you?
Oh, you know, things get airborne and you're in close proximity. You ever see Outbreak?
He spat on you from a few feet away?
No, they cough and then the spit particles go through the air conditioning. And it's this really dramatic CGI shot. And
comply with state and local law as well as your conscience, folks. The Nighthawks are not role models.
So anyways, how did the festival treat you?
Pretty good. Actually, I thought this year was even better organized than last year. I definitely was. I was promised giant monsters, and giant monsters were delivered. It was a good fest. I liked it my second time around. I was not as discombobulated and disorientated.
Yeah, you had a grasp of what to do and how to get things done, where to go, knowing the neighborhood, knowing its proximity to other environs, knowing how to get around town. So
I was definitely not as shocked by nachos.
Now, are you talking about nachos the food or nachos the person?
Why not both?
Yeah, we got to see a film by a friend of ours, Nacho Vigalondo, a filmmaker out of Spain.
Yeah, who we liked before he was the, he has to be at least A minus now. Like he's climbing his way up the lettered list rather rapidly.
Well, we're going to talk about Colossal a little later, but it is something that people should sit up and notice. We've got some real star power behind it. We've got the likes of Anne Hathaway and Tim Blake Nelson and Jason Sudeikis. I think this is going to be a career pivot for Jason Sudeikis.
Yeah,
he does a fantastic job.
This is where Riker-style Jason Sudeikis has literally and figuratively grown the beard.
For this episode, since we had a little more time to cut and it wasn't, we didn't have our backs against the wall, I think we're going to get some statements, some of our friends that we've met at this festival. We're going to give you a little bit of what we've learned, and we actually have an exclusive interview. We have spoken with the lead actor, the title character from The Greasy Strangler, one of the more I don't know if you could call it controversial, but definitely divisive films of the festival. And certainly one of the most controversial, at least coming out of Sundance and in Toronto. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, we do have a special message from our new sponsor.
No, yes, yes. This episode is brought to you by our new charitable foundation, 1F1C, the Society for Perfect Hybrid Tacos. It is a outer flour, inner corn, ingredients on top.
Has this ever happened to you? You've been faced with the decision between a bland but durable flour tortilla or a delicious but dissolving quickly corn tortilla. Well, 1F1C has the solution for you. Put that corn tortilla inside the flour tortilla and get the best of both worlds. That's right, folks. Hashtag 1F1C.
It's autentico and durable. That's a joke, by the way, folks. I actually speak Spanish better than Trevor, but...
That's true. I never did learn the mother tongue. When last we left off, we talked a little bit about Fantastic Debates, which were a rousing good time. I think we're going to have more in-depth coverage on that as our respective lives kind of settle and we can sit down and kind of review the tape, so to speak. So what has happened since then? What has happened since Monday?
A lot. Fantastic Fest is sort of bookended. There's generally a opening event movie and a closing kind of event movie. Often they're premieres. And then...
Usually that's where your big studio titles are going to be.
Yeah, that's where the people that are really, wanting to get their new baby out into the world, give it some buzz, that's where they position their movies. And...
So, for example, and we talked about this in the last episode, The Arrival was our opening night film.
In the middle, we also had a secret screening.
Oh, yeah. I did not get into the secret screening, you lucky dog.
You poor bastard. It wasn't bad.
What did you see?
The secret screening was the new M. Night Shyamalan movie. I'm trying to say his name right.
Yeah, the Shyamalama-ding-dong thing is that's old hat.
Because he was a very earnest boy in person. He was very gracious. He had a good time at the festival. But, there were some sighs when his name hit the credits. That said, not the worst M. Night movie.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I think the worst M. Night movie thus far is The Visit.
I was going to say, on a scale from The Visit to Unbreakable, where would you put it?
Soundly in the middle. I mean, it was... and to be fair, people do like The Visit. They're just not me. I just found all of the cards in The Visit were bad cards. It's entirely predicated on the notion that old people are creepy. It has no other legs.
So tell me a little bit about, what was the name of this? Split, correct?
It's called Split. It is about...
Is there a way to do this without spoiling it?
Actually, I will say, there is a touted spoiler for this movie. It is not a core plot spoiler. It is a tag that has implications about the Shyamalan-Shyamalaverse. The plot itself does not have a true, like, a Sixth Sense level, what a twist. It is a thriller that concerns a character played by James McAvoy, who has dissociative identity disorder, what they used to call multiple personalities. It's an interesting treatment. It's just a little, I don't know. It's a lot like The Darkness when I didn't like how they treated autism. I would just rather they had wandered through this one a little different. I will say it gives McAvoy a lot to do. He's essentially playing multiple roles. The setup is that one of his personalities has committed a sort of sociopathic act, and his other personalities kind of feel hostage to that one and are trying to, using various sort of tradecraft, kind of work around the dominant personality and inform his therapist that he has committed some illegal, immoral, and generally tasteless acts. I guess the spoilery segue is hilarity ensues.
My name's Hedwig.
How old are you?
9. never seen a case like this before.
23 identities live in Kevin's body. Who are you?
Help me get out of here, Hedwig.
You trying to trick me? I'll tell on you.
Aren't you the clever one?
An individual with multiple personalities can change their body chemistry with their thoughts.
Someone's coming for you.
Who's coming?
The Beast.
I really wrestled with it because on the one hand, it's an unusually detailed depiction of multiple personalities that gets into why people disassociate. And someone obviously did a little bit of research to make this movie. But it also, it really does kind of an othering, those multiple personalities, they have shamanic powers in there. They're like, it kind of gets into like the idea that like your other personality could like know a language you don't know. And that's not parsed well in it. Like there's some continuity issues between the personalities, but it was quite a bit like I said when we talked about The Visit that I wanted to see that visual style applied to a Meteor story, and it's fair to say this is that. It was better than The Visit. That is my
Now while you were in Split, I got to see the another festival darling, The Girl with All the Gifts, which I loved. And I was really reticent to see it because it's a zombie movie. I mean, there's no two ways around it. Zombies are definitely a backdrop here. And I am really sick of zombie movies. I've had it with zombie movies.
I'm right there with you, Trevor. I liked zombies back when they were underground.
What would have that been? Day of the Dead?
Hmm?
That's a joke. You know, the zombie movie where they're underground? And so, yeah, I was not excited about a zombie movie, and people were telling me, I know what you mean, I'm with you, but give this one a shot. This one's different. And admittedly, I've heard that before, and I've been wrong before. And folks, I was wrong this time. I was wrong to put off watching this movie. This movie is fantastic. It is based on a young adult novel, and it is several years beyond the zombie apocalypse. We open on this little girl in some kind of prison facility where she is very strictly regimented and tied to her chair, and she's going through a day of classwork. And she's trying to talk to her guards, which treat this sweet little girl very, very poorly. And so it's a very slow unfolding, but outside in the world, the zombies have taken over, and the world is ostensibly ended. And this lone group of survivors is working with a network to try and find a cure, and somehow these children figure into that. Really, it's one of those things where this is a great movie, it's a great narrative. Glenn Close is in this. If you want to see Glenn Close killing some zombies, we have a movie for you. If you want to see a movie that is mostly strong female leads, this movie is for you. If you want to see a movie where the lead character is a non-white, non-cisgendered male, this is for you. There's a lot of progress made here, but it's not that the person's nose is really rubbed in it. It's just they made a good movie with a lot of good elements that are very relevant right now. And at the end of the day, this movie isn't really about the zombie apocalypse as much as it's actually about social change and change through education, and specifically education through the arts. I love that it made me excited about zombies again. I love that it said some shit. And I happen to like what it was saying. So this movie was particularly up my alley, and this is one that I'm going to recommend to just about everybody.
So, it was okay?
It was really good. I believe this one is my favorite of the festival.
I don't know if I could, I've let things settle enough to make that call, but then, no, I think, and then after that, we stumbled out of our 8 o'clock with your mind blown and mine not angry. And we went to the Fantastic Feud.
Yeah, this is an event that, full disclosure, I help write. I provide some of the content. And my video dealer, also my roommate, is the producer of the show. And the host and the grandfather of the show is Scott Weinberg, who is also a friend of mine. So I've been really close to this event for quite a while now.
it's not quite the Family Feud.
No, not really. What it is it's a live game show that's not on television. You get to come. We have two panels of guests, and they are given several rounds of trivia challenges. Sometimes it's just, you know, question and answer. Sometimes it is actually survey-informed Family Feud style questions. And sometimes it's like a Price is Right estimation game. So they've really brought a lot of things together. Max is a big fan of old game shows. Scott is a big fan of old game shows. And so they've really taken a lot of elements from different ones, kind of glued them together and made this one wacky event that sometimes goes smooth as silk and sometimes just falls apart because it gets so chaotic and so loud and so drunk and so fun.
Yeah, I think this year it wasn't quite either extreme. There was definitely a...
Yeah, it kind of ran right down the middle this year.
A few people found the marble in the oatmeal and should have had to drink from the fire hose, but most people were pretty calm.
And so this was your first year attending the feud, right?
I guess a little bit of background should be most of the Fantastic Fest events are kind of lottoed off, or you give your order of preference for every event in a time slot. They build the schedule that mutually disappoints everyone the least.
That's a good way of putting it.
It's how it works.
Yeah, you know, yeah. You know, yeah.
It doesn't define fairness as giving everyone like a first pick. It literally scores how far it degrades you. I was talking to the guy that wrote it, but but yeah, the feud was chaotic. It was fun. It's certainly people left more inebriated than when they arrived. I believe we broke the sacred code of Mitchell and Webb's inebriati, and we finished the second drink.
My payoff for working on the feud is that they pick up my bar tab at the end of the event. And so, I left feeling pretty lubricated, pretty happy. And I think people had fun. That seems to be the reaction. So, let's speed things along. What did you love? What is the one movie that you're taking away that you're going to give to everybody?
Oh, well, if we're talking one movie that we loved, we have to talk about Bad Black.
Oh, we got to talk about Bad Black. Absolutely. Super action Bad Black.
Which is the name of the character. Not just an adjective.
Yes, it's this is a film out of Uganda, which has its own kind of freaky, insane, absolutely buck wild little indie film scene.
So it's kind of a very strange story. One sort of, you know, the kind of guy that looks like an NGO volunteer, because I'm pretty sure that's what he is.
Uh-huh.
Just a very hippie granola guy kind of turns up on the festival scene with a submission. He's like, you guys, you need to watch this. And it turns out that he is this kind of lone volunteer in far-flung Uganda, and he stumbled on this kind of bizarre film scene they have there. And it's very odd. What was the name of the Who Killed Captain Alex?
Yeah, Who Killed Captain Alex. People have probably seen a clip from Who Killed Captain Alex. The trailer has gone out and it's on YouTube. I believe the full movie is on YouTube.
Yeah, it was going around Facebook and YouTube as Crazy Ugandan Movie Trailer.
Or Ugandan Schwarzenegger
was a
term used heavily in the trailer. So it goes under that name too.
Yeah, but it's this... It was kind of insane, very lighthearted, homemade-looking action movie. Well, it turns out this particular filmmaker has been slaving away in the slums of Uganda, and he's made something like 32 features.
Yeah.
And this one kind of emissary fellow got hooked on it, started being in the movies, and now he's kind of brought them to light. And the whole thing is so bizarre that, like, I would be very disappointed if it turned out to be some kind of performance art or publicity stunt. I believe I'd have to give the guy the Hitcher treatment, so please be real. It's this very strange culture of action movies that have come up in the slums, and the movie itself is fun. It's high energy, it's well done, but it requires a lot of context. Like at the beginning of the movie, he said, after the movie, I'll be doing a Q&A because you will have questions. And what happens apparently in Uganda And again, this is something we talked about last year with Hard to Get. There are people of all different levels of wealth in Africa. African cities have suburbs that look like our suburbs. They have downtowns that look like our downtowns. And this is not shot on them. This is shot in the sort of tropey Africa. This is shot in a Ugandan slum. And it's really actually only shot, if you start paying attention, it was only shot in a few courtyards. Like they were hopping over one fence and changing the set and hopping, using it again. It's kind of a sort of African take on Chinatown. Like it's a story of a woman getting through a couple different generations on the street. She starts out as a very young orphan and becomes this crime boss. But all through the movie, there's sort of a guy riffing the movie.
Yeah, see, what happened is that Uganda enjoys American films. And so they'd bring these films into the country, but nobody spoke English. So what they would do is they would hire performers, comedians, people who had experience standing up in front of a mic and entertaining a crowd, and narrate the film for the non-English speakers. The problem is the comedians didn't speak English either, so they didn't know what the movie was about.
Yeah.
And so they just kind of made it up as they went along. And so that has become, it's become a staple of Uganda, the Ugandan theater experience. Well, that is what a movie is to them.
What's funny about Uganda is, I believe English is the official language. And everybody there speaks some English, but they kind of use it as a trade tongue, because Uganda itself is culturally diverse enough that their most fluent language is usually not shared in a very large region. And so to like successfully subtitle a movie for a Ugandan audience, you'd have to put like five sets of subtitles on it. And so what they do is they just have one of these performers voice track it, and he explains the story. And like the specific example he gave was that when he saw Air Force One in Uganda, this guy, Alan, he uses I believe it's an African nickname they've given him, Alan Salai. But his actual last name is credited in the movie. He said when he went to see Air Force One in Uganda, it was the story of how Gary Oldman had an affair with Harrison Ford's wife, and now he wanted revenge. And these guys evidently, because there's a little less reliance on the native soundtrack in the movie, I said this was Tim's Nightmare Theater.
Yeah, yeah.
They're called video halls, and he said they're very much like a bar. They're fully lit, and there'll be two TVs, and one will be showing like soccer news, and the other one will have the film on it. And they'll either dub in this extra track, or the guy will do it
live,
play by play on a mic.
It's a big heist. The winner takes it all.
Huh?
Hey! This is Captain Alex. He's alive. Captain Alex is alive. He's dead. Captain Alex is so dead. Who killed Captain Alex? Schwarzenegger.
But he's describing the movie, and it's affected the pace of their filmmaking, because they assume the guy's going to be there to explain some of the points now. And so it's this very strange, altogether different performance of a film than we're used to.
And so what they have done to kind of make this palatable for a Western audience is they have taken this performance track and translated it to English, made sure that the jokes worked in English, kind of ran them through this emissary that they've been using. And all throughout this movie, there's just a guy riffing into a mic about the movie, and it's not necessarily serious. I mean, there's a lot of funny moments in here.
Oh, and the guy is a good, like, he could be an English language stand-up comic. Like, there's a part where a character says, a slum character is warning an uptown character not to get high on the dope. And he says, you should stay away from these drugs. These drugs will affect your life. And the narrator goes, that's good advice. I should take it. You know, and it's just very...
Or there's another scene where it's a chase sequence, and one of the characters goes to jump a creek, and, you know, this is one-take filmmaking. He doesn't quite make it, and he lands in the water. And then the MC, actually goes into, oh, he's floating around in poo-poo. Yeah. This is Uganda. There's poo-poo everywhere. So, and so with that, you actually get an odd cultural experience because this is shot in a very poor part of the country. This is not doctored. This is what it looks like. And it kind of gives you a window into their world that they are poor, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're emotionally poor. They're people who like to have fun and make movies and have fun watching them.
Well, and I'll tell you what went through my head watching it. It was a very interesting set of transmissions and little logic gates I hopped through watching it.
Yeah.
Because at first, your immediate response is to be condescending. You're like, well, this is surprisingly competent for what they had to work with. That was fairly realistic special effects for you know, people that they don't know the modern method. And then,
well, and that's the thing. All of their equipment is scrap. The computers that they're editing on, they're probably running a copy of Video Toaster from 1993.
He was saying he had Premiere 1.1.
And so, yeah. I mean, nobody is going to mistake this for a Hollywood movie. It looks like a movie that a couple of high school kids made.
Well, but then the next thing that happens to me is it's based entirely on some of the cheerful tone and the way the humor was handled and how well the humor was handled, how good the humor beats were, and also some of the allusions to like African politics and stuff in it and African class politics in it. And it finally just hits you like, these guys, everybody in this movie crew has seen more actual war and violence than everybody in this Austin audience put together. They know what a pile of dead bodies looks like. They know what a shooting looks like. They made it funny.
Yeah, they made it intentionally non-realistic.
They are in on the joke. They understand it's a comedy. And when he alludes to something like, hey, that's how we roll in Uganda, he's being ironic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. There's a guy. They call him Ugandan Schwarzenegger.
This is Swaz. Swaz means Schwarzenegger in Uganda.
And they're making it up. Like, they give these guys all histories. They're just like, he's number one action star. He's the biggest. He's at one point, they call the white guy, Alan, they call him America's Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah.
Which is awesome on so many levels.
Well, and that's the other thing is looking at what aspects of our culture they've chosen to kind of revere or emulate. The names that they drop, Chuck Norris is dropped at one point, you know, or Schwarzenegger's another one. Jean-Claude Van Damme, Wesley Snipes is name dropped at one point. And then they go like a really bizarre place and went Zoe Bell, who is not even necessarily a well-known actress in the United States, and who is probably better known for her stunt work with Uma Thurman.
Yeah, and he's dropping this. There's a car chase in the movie. There's more than one. but during this chase in the movie, a guy's like doing a car stunt, and he says, look at him go. He's like America's Rambo. He's like America's Schwarzenegger. He's like America's Bill Murray. And then he says, he's like Zoe Bell. And so afterward in the panel, someone said, did you feed him those names? Did he know, was that writing on someone's part, some English speaker's part? And he said, no, they love Bill Murray from his animated work. They love Bill Murray from Garfield.
And they say, they see a fat cat run across the street. They point and say, ha, that's Garfield.
That's Bill Murray, yeah. And apparently, they like Zoe Bell because the movie Rise was a big hit there, which makes no particular sense and must have something to do with the way it was unevenly distributed. Maybe that's where all the copies of Rise went. Because I didn't get one until it came out on Netflix. But it ends up being this very bizarre, almost montage of just really strange action. And the other thing is the guy had chops. Like it was... There was good blocking. There was good fight choreography. I said at the time, this is at least as good as any given Shaw Brothers movie. Like, they found some guys. They had a local, I guess, Kung Fu Academy of some kind, and they had some extras, and I don't know how they did it. They probably actually just gave them aspirin and told them to... There's also a lot of... really cool action movies are not the only genre they do, and there's some little trailers and mini docs on it and stuff. And one of the things they did is they had a cannibal scene. So it's one guy who's a modern African, and he's been attacked by other guys from the film crew, and they're dressed as cannibals, and they're eating him, and they're dividing up the human meat. It's this very gory cannibal scene.
Well, no, it was a pregnant woman, and the guy is watching.
Oh, that's
that,
yeah.
Because at one point, they actually, they
you know, it was a trailer for a horror movie. It was them making an Eli Roth-style horror movie. It was, yeah. It was guys from Africa who had watched Cannibal Holocaust and decided to make an homage to Cannibal Holocaust with all their African friends. And it was weirdly uncomfortable up until a certain point, and almost as if on cue, right at the point where it really was getting
a little too much.
A little too much to process. A phone rings, and you think it's a continuity error. You think someone left their phone on the set, and the guy answers it in character and goes, "Oh no, no, honey, we're just finishing some stuff off." Like, it's just this really great, you know, one-sided phone conversation comedy, and then they call it, and then he hangs up the phone. He looks at his buddies and says, "They caught Chuck Norris. We have to go."
What else was really cool about this is that we got a specific cut of this movie that he customized for an Austin audience. He replaced a couple of place names, like literally crossed out a place name and then wrote Austin next to it. And he even shot a little opening for it, you know, the Ugandans invading Austin, Texas and blowing up a very crudely animated Alamo Draft House.
Yeah.
And so that was really fun. The good news is Bad Black is now Fantastic Fest Audience Award winning Bad Black, which means, theoretically, if we can get visas arranged, if we can make this happen, director Isaac, the director of this film, that's his Western nickname, he is entitled to a super fan badge, 4 nights accommodation, and coach airfare to Austin, Texas for Fantastic Fest next year. And believe you me, talking to people online after they made the announcement that it won the audience award, people want this to happen. They want to meet these guys. These filmmakers are incredibly talented, have a lot of heart. I mean, they're effervescent. It's almost infectious. You feel good watching these movies, these really violent gangster films. But because they do have that weird kind of lighthearted theatrical element to them, the personality effervesces, and hopefully we can get that worked out, because I think they would have a good time.
Well, there's something so defiant about it, like on every level, like on the one level, and the other irony is, and this is another thing we were talking about in the panel, with English being the official language of Uganda and these being multilingual movies for the people from the surrounding countryside, these movies have not been invited to Uganda's sort of internal film scene. Like, they have a film scene, but you know, Uganda is a large place. Africa is a large place. You can lay the continental United States on Africa 3 times without the United States outline touching itself.
Right.
And we tend to just sort of name drop them like they're U.S. states.
Right. You know, right.
But Uganda is a large country with its own industry, with its own thing going on. But they don't, the Ugandan film scene apparently does not like the image of the African slums. And so they're trying to make the point that there are other things in Africa. And they're sort of a little bit, I gathered between the lines, a little bit embittered that this is getting so much attention. But I think that's the same patronizing impulse I had at first.
Right.
And it's just coming from their upper class instead of foreigners. The idea that they aren't in on the joke and they don't know any better. And I didn't find that to be true at all. The longer I watched it, the funnier it got. And mm-hmm. the more you realize that they have a sense of humor about what's going on geopolitically in their country. Then what happened is this is getting screened in places none of their shishi movies can get.
Yeah.
So they Streisand affected the thing they were trying to cover up. And another thing is, the future of this for big distribution might be kind of dubious, because the provender of a lot of the materials used, the just the nightmare that would be getting releases, would be getting, you know,
yeah,
clearances. Just
Well, and that's the thing. You know, Who Killed Captain Alex, which is the first one that kind of went viral, is available in full on YouTube, and we were actually invited by the guest who was there with the film to watch it there. So, I mean, there's nothing really shady about it. It's a shame, though, that we can't get a couple of bucks to these filmmakers, and maybe there is a way of doing that.
Looked like they had some Kickstarter-type stuff set up.
Maybe, but. And if we can find some of that, we'll throw it up in the show notes. But, I mean, even you watch these trailers, Isaac puts his phone number, his cell phone number, in the trailer for you to call, and he will come deliver you a copy of the movie.
Oh, well, that's the other fascinating thing, is there's no video store there.
Right.
So they don't, or no, and there's no DVD distribution. And, well, and the other thing that's interesting, this is a separate thing about Africa, is the African Union sort of leapfrogged us on debit card payments. Africa started propping up their economy with transferable cell phone minutes about 5-10 years ago. So if you have a guy's phone number, you have his e-wallet. You can effectively PayPal him. They have this system called M-Pesa, which has started out Kenyan and I believe is now diversified. Effectively, what happens is if you see this in the video hall and you want a copy, You text him, and in the course of texting him, you order it and pay for it, and he comes with it. Alex, the presenter, was saying that when you're sitting around with the cast and crew, their phone rings off the hook with the people ordering the movie, and also just fans. He says weird little niche fan clubs have propped up for these all over the world, and like so, Isaac will get a call from people in a running gag about the word commando in the movie. So he said people from the, you know, the phone will ring and it'll just be some guy from Finland going, commando, commando. And he'll yell, commando back. And my dad was a commando. My mom was a commando. My dog was a commando. But I am a doctor.
This doctor needs borders.
God damn it. But it nearly destroyed us, and we fell down. We were rolling in the aisle with sincere and joyous laughter during Bad Black.
Speaking of movies that are going to challenge people, you did not get into The Greasy Strangler.
No, I did not get into The Greasy Strangler.
Were you particularly eager to even try? Was it something that tickled your interest?
I didn't. I ranked it above last a couple slots, but I wasn't. If it had come up randomly, I would have watched it. I wasn't avoiding it. Neither was I seeking it out.
Okay, that's fair. Well, you're not alone. I have talked to a few people about their experience with The Greasy Strangler. This is proving to be a very divisive film. People either love it or they hate it. I don't think it is what the internet conversation is saying, that you either get it or you don't. I think a lot of people got it. I just sincerely don't think it's for everybody. And it's a strange movie because it's daring you to hate it. They do just enough right and do just enough correctly that they're showing you. It's like, no, we know how to make a movie the way you're supposed to make a movie. But we don't want to make that movie. We're going to make a different movie, and we're going to break some of these rules, and you're just going to have to deal with it.
Particularly the rules against grease and strangling.
I'll kick our conversation off to a few of our friends at the festival, and this includes Michael St. Michaels, a.k.a. Michael Rapaport, the title character, the actor who played the title character in The Greasy Strangler.
I'm sorry. My dad can get cranky sometimes.
As your father, I forbid you to marry.
He sure has a temper on him.
He likes to shout. I like to smile.
You cheesy old cornball.
Imagine me stroking her with a pink feather. Yeah, that's what I am. I'm a cheesy old cornball.
I kind of like it.
Hey! Stop talking to the customer and help Dad with his shorts!
Mark Ball from Fancy Friends Podcast. I enjoyed it a lot, which is weird because I don't normally think I like that kind of humor. Like, it definitely dips into parts where it's like so stupid that like you're not sure if you want to laugh almost, but the jokes just keep coming basically, and almost all of them are in like fairly bad taste, I would say.
Davis Odell. I loved it, too. I think it's kind of an X-rated mix between Tim and Eric and Napoleon Dynamite. Totally worked for me. I don't know if I'll ever be able to trust my boners again. But I'd recommend it to everybody. Moms, grandmas, kids, everybody.
I'm Will.
Anonymous William.
Oh, it could have been greasier. But no, it's a movie that's an impossible recommendation because people are going to like it or hate it, and it's impossible to figure in advance, even if you know that they might enjoy kind of anti-humor and strange things of that nature. It's still a very divisive movie.
Hi, I'm Mark Martinez. I'm here from Austin, Texas, and I work for the Austin Heart Society.
You saw The Greasy Strangler at South by Southwest.
South by and Fantastic Fest are really different environments to watch a film, I feel. I didn't know anything about it, sat down, and I'll have to say, while it might not be the exact film for me, a lot of people did enjoy it. It is one of the most quotable films. And, it might not be for me, but it found its audience. It definitely did, and a lot of people dug it.
Janet loves me. I love her.
You're making a big mistake.
Joe needs to go now. I am the Greasy Strangler.
Hi, I'm Michael St. Michaels, or Michael Rappaport, or one of those guys. Hey, you know, I'm schizophrenic, and so am I.
And you had a very unique role in this year's festival. You appear in one of the films.
Yes, I got very lucky. Jim Hosking seems to had a mental lapse of some sort and actually gave me a job. and it's been phenomenal.
So tell me about the overall experience. How have things gone over the course of the shoot? How have they been since then?
Well, during the shoot, I was sick. I never got enough rest, and I imagine that helped. But no, it was. I was very thankful it was over. It took me a few days to put a sentence together after it was, and I expected to come to South By, but then all of a sudden we got notice that we're going to Sundance, and everybody was in shock, you know. And it's been kind of insane for me anyway since then. I retired a few years ago, and I just did a couple little things in other people, you know, in films, just mainly to keep busy because you get bored when you don't have to do anything, and I'm amazed. I'm just glad. Well, I wish that this had happened to me 40 years ago in my career, but yeah.
So you're talking Sundance, South by Southwest, Fantastic Fest. These are three different, very different festivals.
Yeah.
How has the audience reaction been with each one?
It seems to be really good. I guess there's no counting for taste these days, but it's just, it really surprises me, you know, because I can't really watch myself until years later without being, well, in this case, appalled, because I see my face, you know, and I'm delusional, so to actually see what I was really looking like, at first I was in shock, and then I started thinking, well, in 10 years I'm going to wish I looked that good. But I'm just thrilled and amazed and bless you, Jim, wherever you are.
You know, one of the things I've had a hard time contextualizing for somebody who's, you know, not familiar with the film world is trying to sell this film and tell them what it's about, but at the same time, what it's about on a bigger level. I mean, when somebody comes up and asks you, oh, what's your film about, what do you tell them? How do you sell it?
Well, I tell them it's a family values film. You know, it's just that. It's a film about a father and a son. And, you know, the father's a little peculiar, and the son's a fucking wimp. But by the end, he grows a pair, and that's good. Yeah.
It's a word, it's a word, it's a word, it's a word, it's a
this year, one of the little themes, and Fantastic Fest will have many themes over a given year. We've talked about the fact that dead pets seems to be a recurring theme. But one of the themes this year were giant monsters, or kaiju. And so we had a few movies that involved monsters of large size. And the first, probably most notable, probably the one name that most people are going to remember, probably the one property of genre film that people really know and key into and can quote back to you, and that is the latest entry in the Godzilla franchise, Shin Godzilla. The American name for it is Resurgence. Godzilla Resurgence.
That's not bad.
This is a different take on the big screaming lizard.
Well, it isn't. It very much reminded me of the classic Godzilla movies. This very much follows the response to Godzilla via the government. So it's sort of a West Wing style. What did you call it?
Call it Aaron Sorkin's Godzilla.
Yeah, that one worked better in print.
Yeah. But it's more about the crisis management aspect of it than it is the giant monster stomping on Tokyo aspect of it. There's still plenty of stomping. You're going to get your pound of flesh out of the old guy. It's a reboot. It's a different origin story. We're kind of starting from square one. And in as much as Godzilla, back when it was first released in Japan, was a response to the nuclear threat from America, this one is kind of a criticism of the Japanese government in the wake of the Fukushima disaster, and kind of how the government bureaucracy and playing everything by the rules kind of hampered the response time on some things.
There's a lot of comedy of errors in just the sort of politicking and how it slows down responses, and this is played pretty successfully for comedy, and it's also manages to be comedy that translates, which is often troublesome Japanese to English.
Mm-hmm.
Just because for one thing, the construction and timing of the language is very different, which is kind of like, there's a Japanese honorific that is usually, like, it gets subtitled as sir, but it sounds like the word sorry.
Yeah, so everybody, when they were addressing the Prime Minister, sounded very apologetic.
Yeah, it sounds like they're starting all their sentences with sorry, but.
Yeah.
And I almost think they understood that when they were pacing this cut of it, because the humor in here works pretty good for monolingual audiences on either side. It's also a very interesting Godzilla because he's got a little CGI help, but it's at the core a rubber suit guy.
Mm-hmm.
And not badly done.
No.
It just doesn't look, certainly doesn't look like the latest American
Edwards.
Godzilla.
Yeah. Which, and I actually have to cop to a bit of a conundrum here. I really, really ragged on Gareth Edwards' Godzilla for many of the reasons that I actually enjoyed this Godzilla. And I'm not sure if it's a cultural thing, I'm not sure if it's an ethnocentric thing, but the fact that we missed a lot of Godzilla action in Gareth Edwards' Godzilla because it was more about the human response to that action. Now, granted, I also found the human response to be quite ridiculous, but that is what Shin Godzilla is kind of the ridiculous human reaction
if we're gonna,
kaiju attack.
And I particularly enjoyed the goggle-eyed larval Godzilla. I mean,
which was kind of a fake-out. Godzilla goes through a pretty quick and physical evolution from sea creature to land creature to nuclear monster T-Rex. Yeah, when he first hops up on land, he's a little ridiculous looking. And you almost think it's another monster. Like, this is going to be a Godzilla battle movie. And that Godzilla is going to come in and be the hero and save Tokyo. But no, it's actually just this thing is growing at an astronomical rate.
The other kind of beauty of it is the sort of middle form is quite ridiculous looking. So there's the moment when you think it's a kaiju versus kaiju movie. And then there was the moment when the audience started looking around going, is that it? That's not it, is it? I mean, it was pretty, it was a nice, vicious in a nice way.
A very, very tiny arms and very, very, very long tail.
And lots of gill blood. More gill blood than most things.
I would recommend this. I would definitely tell people buyer beware, though, because this is not your standard Godzilla movie. I think if you grew up on Godzilla versus Megalon, Son of Godzilla, Destroy All Monsters, that type of thing, this may not be the same type of Godzilla movie. This is another one that's a capital A art film, and that's something that'll come up later. This director was saying some shit with this movie, which is not out of his wheelhouse. This is the director is the guy, creator, head poobah of Neon Genesis Evangelion, a very popular, very ponderous kind of... it is an anime, and it's very metaphoric and very artistic. I want people to be prepared for that it is not an action-packed movie. This is kind of a strange kaiju satire.
Like I said, though, it did remind me of, like, not so much the old or Godzilla vs. King Kong or, like, the many fun ones that were made in the interim, but there is a run of color, I'd say 60s, 70s, late 60s, early 70s Godzilla movies that this is very reminiscent of. And I think they were maybe that run of Godzilla movies was a bigger deal in Japan than it was here, where they were kind of packaged for completists. It was a pretty decent hoot. A few new, interesting, new little sort of canonical tweaks and twists on how Godzilla works, like how he could exist physically, as it were, and still shoot laser beams and fire.
I did not get into this other movie that also involves giant monsters, but you did. You got into The Monster Calls.
How does the story begin?
With a boy. Too old to be a kid.
You're coming to live with me. Don't touch anything.
Too young to be a man.
I no longer see.
What did he do?
Well, this one is, it stars Sigourney Weaver, Liam Neeson, as sort of the voice and kind of rough physical model for the monster, who is a giant nature spirit that comes in the night and starts in these wonderfully executed kind of fantasy destruction sequences, just pries this kid's house apart and spirits him away to show him things and tell him tales. It's very much like I would say it's kind of modeled on A Christmas Carol, because he appears and he tells the boy he's going to tell him three stories or lessons, and at the end, the boy will have to recite a fourth one back to him. The implication is that if he hasn't appreciated the lesson, he will be squished like a bug. In the meantime, it's spooled out for us that the young boy Connor, his mother is ill, his father is estranged, his grandmother's very strict, and so it's this kind of exploration of him coping at home and at school with his mother's illness. And a cynical person could read this blurb and call this a maudlin movie and accuse it of having like a Notebook quality. But I'm gonna tell you, man, people that go to Fantastic Fest have seen some these are people that laugh off movie violence and are jaded toward being punched in the feels. And there was an awful lot of audible sniffling in this theater. It was a very, very emotionally fraught movie. I don't know, maybe some sort of wave of emotion built up in the room. Maybe it won't play when it gets more widely circulated. But it was pretty effective. Not a dry eye in the house for A Monster Calls. Good turn in particular by Sigourney Weaver. It does something a little different, not so Ripley-y, and a very tolerable child actor. I didn't want to hate myself watching him.
Rounding out kind of our kaiju trilogy is the newest film from Nacho Vigalondo, an American release starring Anne Hathaway, Tim Blake Nelson and a shockingly fantastic performance from Jason Sudeikis. And the movie is called Colossal. Like the best Nacho Vigalondo films, you think you know what this movie is going to be about, but you're wrong.
Well, the framing here, the initial setup, and we went into this pretty cold. Like, we'd read a blurb, we had a little bit of an idea what it was about. But the framing device here sounds like a rom-com. Anne Hathaway plays a woman who is a professional blogger, and she's living that big city, kind of four martini lunch life, and she parties a little too hard, causing some problems with her relationship, and her boyfriend tells her he can't do it anymore, kicks her out of their apartment, and she ends up returning to the small town she's from because her parents' house is vacant there. She needs a place to stay while she gets her life back together. So she gets a job as a waitress at a bar owned by her childhood friend. And of course, with the hinted at alcohol problem and then the waitressing, she starts drinking quite a bit after hours with the boys from the bar. And they are walking home one night and come to find out South Korea has been attacked by a Godzilla-type creature.
Suddenly, out of nowhere, kaiju.
Right when you're falling asleep, the movie decides to make no sense whatsoever. And in a very good, awesome, I would compare this, this reminded me of some of the better short stories of like a Neil Gaiman or a Stephen King in a non-horror lane. The writer and director of this get to find themselves in very good company. It's a really intriguing exploration because it's one of the few things I've ever seen where they discuss functional alcoholism in a way that doesn't make it tropey. Like, it's not... Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not just alcoholism. There are other characters with other addictions present. Alcohol is taking front and center, and we don't want to say too much, but yeah. There is a pivot point in this movie that revolves around the revelation of one of the characters' addiction problem. And how that kind of comes to a head and doesn't end well.
Well, and another character is, right when you've given up on them, sort of recontextualize a bit through the framing of what could be considered an addiction. But what I liked about it is without the sort of preaching tropes of like a DUI or running over someone's kid or pet or something, I almost said without any earth-shattering consequences, but...
No, That is exactly what they are.
Yeah, but the camaraderie of the bar is viewed very fondly here. And it's just sort of like a, hey, it's fun, but sometimes you got to stop. Mm-hmm. Like it's a very different exploration of alcoholism than we've seen before. For a wide release movie, it's a very head-on look at gaslighting and man-woman stuff.
You know, that's the thing. That's what this movie is really about. It's about a man and it's about a woman. It's about their relationship. And it's about a woman finding her strength, which is great to see right now, especially in the hands of a fantastic actress like Anne Hathaway, coming from the brilliant imaginative mind of Nacho Vigalondo in writing and direction. The way this movie ties in its giant Godzilla monster is that there is some sort of psychic link between the main character played by Anne Hathaway and this kaiju, that what she does in her life seems to affect what's going on the other side of the world, in Korea, where this kaiju is attacking. And so she kind of has to come to grips with that. In the meantime, we've got Jason Sudeikis. He gets involved in a love triangle between Anne Hathaway himself and a third party at the bar. And we come to a point where we're not sure what the motivations of all the people are involved. And so there is a bit of unraveling, and what I love is how realistically these characters are treated, and specifically how well, I don't want to say too much, but how well Jason Sudeikis plays his character and plays the emotional beats of his character. I just love the fact that we've got this kind of yuckster, one of the better SNL guys who's done this comedy or that comedy, and he's this fantastic actor in this movie, which I think is going to get this movie a lot of attention.
I don't know if this is a comedy by the Greek definition of comedy versus tragedy, but what's cool about this is while it's making points, it's packed with all this dense content. It is a movie that has serious theme. I think the way I expressed it to one person outside of the draft house was it's a movie and a film at the same time. Like, it's very funny, very well-paced, but also has serious bones as well. It just manages to hit the ball out of the park without ever being shrill, preachy, boring, or mean. What else real quick? Definitely worthy of a mention. Watched a weird little Swiss movie called Alois.
I missed out on that one. How was that?
Well, you're a fan of the Swedish crime sort of subgenre?
Yeah, I like my Norwegian kind of Scandinavian, you know, the countries that use a lot of umlauts do specifically good crime films.
Should we say Northern European?
There you go.
Yeah. And this sets up to be one of those. We have a sort of reclusive kind of private detective type whose sort of forte is surveillance. And his father and business partner has passed on quite recently, and he's very isolated in his apartment. It starts with him kind of surveilling people, and you wonder if he's doing it for work or for pleasure, what have you. And then a woman steals his equipment while he's drunk, gets his phone number, calls him on the phone, and speaking of kind of odd meditative things, she takes him through these kind of mental exercises that they refer to as phone walking. I didn't Google it to see if it was true, but they allude to it being an actual practice in like Japan in 1997 or something. But substantially the idea is because she is socially anxious, he is socially anxious, they will get into as close of a sensory deprivation as they can. Like I think he stares at a white wall and she hides in a particular corner in her apartment. And they go on imaginary dates together while on the phone. And then it starts going to this very strange place where they've kind of mastered this meditative discipline. And they take themselves to kind of imaginary places where they have, you know, superpowers. Or they can do strange things they can't do in real life. And then they also kind of start to idealize their meditative versions of each other. Until they're not sure if they ever want to meet in person. It's a very weird, fanciful, but intriguing movie. And it just goes strange places. It's fun. It's visually brilliant. It's just a good little movie.
Huh. Well, you know what, Matt? I tell you what. I think we've got one more episode in us. There's a lot of films that we haven't discussed yet. We're by no means being completists. This is not a comprehensive version of what we have seen. We're going to have reviews popping up at NighthawksPodcast.com. So keep your eye there for a few written reviews. But yeah, I think we've got another one in us, including some audio that we got from the Q&A for the premiere of the first two episodes of Ash vs. Evil Dead on the Starz Network. We also have another TV show that premiered at Fantastic Fest. We saw the first episode of HBO's Westworld. And so we've got that coming, too. So
you said that with such a happy tone. Westworld, it'll be a hoot.
It was a hoot.
Nothing dark will happen.
Never. Never. So, folks, we're going to wrap this up. Matt, any last thoughts before we hit the pause button and then start this again for another episode?
I am thoughtless.
You're thoughtless. Wonderful. Well, folks, find us on Facebook, Nighthawks Podcast. Find us on Twitter at Nighthawks Pod. You can also find us on Stitcher, on iTunes, where it would be a fantastic favor to us if you were to subscribe, leave a review, leave a rating, recommend us to your friends. And for now, we're going to wrap it up because it's almost morning.
Welcome back. Yes, okay, it's VJM right back at you. Bringing you the new movie from Ramon Film Productions, Uganda. Home of the best movies. See it and believe.